This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. We usually tape in the offices of Raider, but today we're taping at my home. But I do want to thank Raider, a hands-on IT service provider that integrates all of your needs for advanced technical support, effective communication options, and cybersecurity. Raider's motto is, you just want it to work, we understand. Please visit RaiderSolutions.com for more information. I'd like to thank Iberia Bank, our premier sponsor. They support our community in so many ways, and their dynamic team is committed to serving the banking needs of clients in this region and throughout the southeastern United States. Iberia Bank offers the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. Please visit IberiaBank.com for more information. The generosity of Lafayette General Health also makes this podcast possible. Lafayette General has been a leader in telemedicine. With the Health Anywhere app, your family can access quality urgent care at any time without an appointment, all from the comfort of your home. It's the waiting room redefined. Download the app today at lghealthanywhere.com. Today's guest is Ben Berthelot, who has served as Executive Director of the Lafayette Convention and Visitors Commission since June 2012. Prior to joining LCVC, Ben worked for City Parish President Joey Durrell's administration and served as Director of the Office of Community Development. He currently serves as Vice Chair of the Louisiana Travel Association's Board of Directors. A Lafayette native, Ben is a graduate of St. Thomas More Catholic High School and UL Lafayette with a degree in public relations. And Ben has a special place in the development of this podcast as he and LCVC's board were supportive of our efforts to share the light on our region's people and culture. They provided seed money to develop the concept, the website, and get it started. I'll forever be grateful for that support. We're here today to catch up with Ben's work since our initial interview in 2017 and to learn about how COVID-19 and the shutdown has affected our local tourism and hotel industries. Ben, you're very patient. We're here in my home, and I can't thank you enough for your kindness and all you do to support my work and what you do for our community.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me back on. It's hard to believe it's been almost 3 years since our last get-together, but great work that you've been doing, and I've been keeping up with it.
Thank you. You know, when we first taped, we focused a lot on all the good things in our community, your community involvement. So I do want to refer people back to our website. They can listen to your initial interview. You've been honored for so many things, Ben. You've served in so many leadership positions, and you are really serving as a leader right now. We are experiencing major problems along with the rest of the country and the world with our local tourism industry, which we depend on in South Louisiana.
Absolutely. The tourism economy was probably the fastest and hardest hit industry directly as a result of COVID-19. Obviously, we're a little unique, unfortunately, in that the oil economy crashed the same time COVID hit. But just as a result of COVID, our industry was hit almost overnight. And there's so many statistics out there available, but the U.S. Travel Association estimates 8 million jobs lost in the tourism industry. The effect is expected to be nine times that of 9/11 on the travel industry. And we all know how bad 9/11 was on the industry. So it's definitely a tough time. And just a little unique in that it's not just us here in Lafayette, like it would be for Hurricane Katrina or something like that. It's all across the country and all across the world. But here locally, we dropped as low as 23% in occupancy in mid-March. Room revenue dropped around 70% immediately. We're starting to see a little bit of uptick. We got as high as 42% occupancy last week, and room revenue for a week actually got over $1 million, which was the first time it had gotten over $1 million for our area since all this happened. So starting to see some small signs, and a large piece of that is a decision that was made to allow the youth sports market to open as part of phase one is something that we really advocated for and lobbied on behalf of as my role in the Resilient Louisiana Hospitality Task Force that I'm serving on, along with colleagues from all across the state.
That's a governor-appointed task force.
The task force is, and our, I'm sorry, the commission is governor-appointed, and then we have the task force is chaired by Kyle France, who is very heavily involved in Louisiana Superdome, and Jill Kidder, who runs the Louisiana Travel Association, of which I'm the current chair of.
But
we really pushed to get that opened up because we felt like it could be done safely. If you look at the youth sports market in a baseball or softball field, by nature, you already have social distancing with the positions that people play. In terms of the fans, it's mostly mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, brother, sisters, so you don't have thousands of people at each game watching. Mm-hmm. And then what we advocated for was that the dugout, you could have no more than 10 people. So anyway, fortunately, the governor approved those recommendations for phase one, and as a result, we immediately saw action in our ballparks and a small shot in the arm to our economy. This past Saturday, we hit 63% occupancy on Saturday night, which is a far cry from the 23% that we started with.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, it's just one night, but it goes to show you the power of tourism in that without that sports market, then people aren't just traveling yet.
Right.
So it's the fastest growing piece of our tourism economy, that sports market is, and that's a direct result of the work that's been done in Youngsville with their sports complex, and Broussard with their sports complex, and Pelican Park with their improvements to their complex, and there's a great complex in Erath as well. And so the tournaments that we had this past weekend were taking place all across the region, and we had great amount of attendance and participation, and it's great to see that the people back on the field. I know I have friends whose kids play that travel ball, and probably had 15 or so friends on social media just posting pictures of how much fun it was for them to be back. And they're able to do it safely, which is something that we're advocating for our entire industry. We believe that we can, the more we're allowed to open things up, whether that's restaurants or attractions, that we can open things up safely, and I think we're proving that.
I'd like to point out our local hotels, you know, they're not owned. When you see a Holiday Inn Express sign or something, these are, I don't know if they're small business, but they're business people that have mortgaged property. They've built these, and they need to have a certain percentage to stay profitable. And I know it's at least 65 to 75%, which is doable in a normal economy, but to have this hope that things can return, that must have been a great weekend for them also.
I think you're exactly right. And we've immediately saw the DoubleTree as an example. Our largest property had 130 employees when this hit, and they went down to 12. And what's interesting is normally when you have this type of economic downturn, the salespeople are the ones that stay on board because it's their job to bring traffic back to the hotel that allows the housekeeper to have a job, that allows the banquet department to have a job. But in this scenario, everybody was laid off. So you had the general manager wearing five hats. He always does, but even more hats. Mm-hmm. You had the people in the banquet department trying to be a part of the sales team because that's as leads came in, those kind of things. And so that's just one. But you're right, you know, 23%, 40% occupancy is not sustainable for any large period of time. And just because you have a chain on your hotel doesn't mean that that's owned by somebody in north, you know, up north. These are local people whose kids go to your school, and they're a big part of our economy. So we're excited about that. But just to give you a few more stats, since COVID-19 pandemic hit us in mid-March, we've lost 38,540 room nights from just the meetings, sports, and conventions piece of our business. That does not include leisure traffic, doesn't include corporate traffic, doesn't include festivals and those kind of things. And that's a loss of around $51 million in economic impact. Again, not including festivals. We know Festival International now has an impact of $50 million by itself over that course of that weekend. And so these are huge numbers that we're talking about. But it's nice to see small growth in our occupancy. We hit 42% last week, and then room revenue has come up a little bit as well. We finally got over $1 million for 1 week a few weeks ago. So there's small signs, and we believe the more that we're allowed to open back up safely, and then, you know, the meeting sports piece of our business is not going to come back until the fall. But the sports market is going to have to drive us and keep us going until that time.
Have we? Where are we locally with our restaurants? You know, we're talking about hotels, of course, but the restaurants have taken a major hit. I know we've lost a few of our longest term restaurants, like Don's Seafood and others. Where are we right now?
Sure. Well, I believe it's the statewide statistic is 52% of those who have now filed for unemployment are either in the hospitality the accommodations business or the food services business. And that's a significant number. And so that the struggles of our restaurants have been well documented, and we're mm-hmm. trying to do what we can through our Eat Lafayette campaign to help them out. But we have seen a few closures, as have cities all across the state. But as we enter into phase two, and now with 50% occupancy, mm-hmm. hopefully that's going to be enough that it'll be a shot in the arm to turn the corner. And I'll tell you what, our restaurants have done such a great job pivoting and just coming up with different business models that they weren't accustomed to. And mm-hmm. I think it's a sign of our entrepreneurship that we have in our area. But we had the opportunity to eat Saturday at La Pizzeria for the first time. And that's just such a sad story.
What a treat.
Randy Daniel, who now chairs the Restaurant Association for the Acadiana chapter, bought that restaurant 4 weeks before mm-hmm. COVID-19. Mm-hmm. And can you imagine? And
how's he doing?
He seems to be doing okay. I mean, he's really been busting and mm-hmm. you know, been I think a really great example of pivoting during these times, and so we went out there at La Pizzeria, but it was just great to be back into a restaurant again in person. We've done our part, like everybody else, to order but to sit out in a restaurant and my, you know, we had to apologize for our kids because they hadn't been in a restaurant in four months. They were going nuts.
Man, so, pizza too.
Yeah,
huh?
Absolutely.
Are you a cook? Do you like to
Love to cook. Uh-huh. I actually, something that's just over the last few years, like a button, a switch flipped, but uh-huh. I'll pretty much cook every night, and which my wife enjoys and I enjoy, and I've been experimenting a little bit. Mm-hmm.
I think the restaurants opening, though, is going to be a marriage saver down the line because people are going nuts being stuck at home. So
you don't realize, I think that's, you know, fortunately, we have a culture of our people eat out a lot, and mm-hmm. and that's to the benefit of our restaurants. But when you take that away, it magnifies the negative impact on those guys. It's good to see them coming back on board.
Right. So I guess you're looking at best practices from mm-hmm. around the country, because you know it's not just, like you said, one region of the U.S. that's been affected. So are you, through your position too with the Travel Association, are you close with your peers around the country, or are a lot of you talking about what's working,
right.
or is it more commiserating at this point? Like, what's right. the word nationwide?
Well, the unique thing about this pandemic, again, is that everybody's experiencing. So we have been able to reach out to our colleagues all across the country and get best practices. But one of the things that we know, the research has shown, is that people are going to not be hopping on a plane immediately to start mm-hmm. traveling again. So we're going to have to rely on the regional traffic, the statewide traffic, the drive market traffic, which has always been a big piece of what we do, mm-hmm. but we're pivoting a little bit, and we'll be focusing our advertising efforts on those regions and other parts of the state here early on as people start to feel comfortable traveling again.
Mm-hmm. I'm almost wondering if it might help Louisiana with the automobile mm-hmm. travelers, because mm-hmm. If you're in the region and you're usually used to flying somewhere else mm-hmm. to drive to Louisiana, would be such a great option, you know?
Yeah, well, we have a very big state next to us in Texas. Mm-hmm. And so Texas has always been one of our biggest markets. Other Louisianians is the number one market for every city in Louisiana. I think that's probably in every state because, you know, the proximity. But then Texas is a high number two. And so having Texas right next to us, I do believe that that's going to be a key market for us as we move out of this and into the next level of travel and
right.
comfort level.
Right. And if New Orleans is staying a little bit more shut down, that's probably going to help Lafayette, you know, as far as people looking for cultural experiences. So.
Right. As people staycation and they go to experience different parts of the state, the more that we're able to show that we're opening up and we're opening up safely. And not to mention, we're really going to be pushing the affordability piece because mm-hmm. we really are a very affordable destination. And that's going to be important, I think, now for people as their livelihood has been affected, their income and all those things, that they're going to want to travel because they have a lot of bent up mm-hmm. energy and just want to get out of the house, but doing so affordably is going to be important. So that's the first campaign that we're actually rolling out, speaks to our affordability, which has been recognized, mm-hmm. you know, all across the country, for an area where you can stay here relatively cheaply. We have a lot of free events. We have a lot of low cost attractions that you can make a weekend of it for mm-hmm. a couple hundred bucks.
So, Ben, for people that are listening local, I know there's a lot to do. I guess it's opening up. Like, can people, you know, through Pack and Paddle or these different outdoor adventure places, are people Are they getting out? You know, kayaking, fishing?
Yes.
Is this all, you know, I mean, are we picking up with them?
The outdoor experience is something that people are doing all across the country. I saw bike sales are skyrocketing.
You can't get a bike. Yeah.
Can't find a bike. And so that the outdoor experience, which has always been a big piece of mm-hmm. what we do, I think plays well to what we're trying to accomplish, and that you can get on a kayak by yourself in Lake Martin or in the Chaffalai Basin and yeah. feel safe and go experience some of the wonderful outdoors mm-hmm. that we're known for all across the world. So all those things are important for us right now as people are beginning to travel again.
Right. I'd like to pause for Discover Lafayette's Past, sponsored by our friends at Rally Marketing, a digital marketing agency that can assist you with marketing automation, content development, search engine optimization, and strategies on how to use social media to turn into a moneymaker for your business. For more information, please visit rallymarketing.com. And now the moment. The Bill Landry Orchestra, originally assembled and known as the Louisiana Six, played Dixieland jazz all along the Gulf Coast in Louisiana and Texas. The family band was wildly popular in Cajun country, and they were mentioned as early as 1918 in the Daily Advertiser when they played at the Martin Dance Hall in Scott. Members included Sidney Cap Hebert on trumpet, Delma Hebert as a violinist, along with Leo Girard, Alif Kusun Girard, Noah Hebert, Wilson Hebert, and Viola Hebert Landry. The band was so successful that they were able to buy a Model T and other fine vehicles through the years as they traveled until they ultimately disbanded in 1941 as band members were drafted to serve in World War II. After the war, the band was reconfigured and went by the name of their leader, Bill Landry, until his death in 1979. Band member Lucien Landry's granddaughter, Yvette Landry, has been a guest on Discover Lafayette, and she is very well known for her voice and musical talent, which obviously runs in her family. Thanks to Rally Marketing for this moment. And now back to our show. So, Ben, let's pick up where we are. So people are looking at best practices, having staycations. What would you like to see? What's the best case scenario? You said we're opening up more. People are coming back in the fall. But what types of things? Are we still doing Eat Lafayette?
We are. We've been trying to figure out what that would look like. But as we progress each week in different things, we're now in phase two and 50% occupancy. We had immediately pivoted back in March, and I think we were one of the first, if not the first, organizations that had a comprehensive listing of all the restaurants and what they were doing mm-hmm. to go. We've been doing that since March, and technically Eat Lafayette doesn't start until June. But now that we're in phase two, we'll be rolling out the campaign once again, and it's going to change a little bit in several ways, actually. The first, and I think most important, is given the financial constraints of our restaurants right now, we didn't feel it was appropriate to have them buy into the campaign like they used
right.
to. So we've waived the registration fees for that, and open it up to anybody who has participated in the past or any locally owned restaurant in Lafayette Parish or really uh-huh. Acadiana if they wanted to be. And so we have over 200 restaurants right now that are
wow.
that are a part of the campaign.
Is that the greatest number ever, or is that on par?
It is. It uh-huh. is. We've averaged around 100 in the past.
That's wonderful.
So we're excited about
yeah.
that. And then, of course, over the last 3 years, we've kicked off the campaign in conjunction with the Lieutenant Governor's Louisiana Seafood mm-hmm. Cook-Off. That was scheduled for June 22nd, but with the COVID-19 and the uncertainties around that, that's been pushed back to August 25th, so that it won't be a kickoff for the campaign, but it'll be more so towards the end of the campaign, hopefully get some momentum as we close out the campaign. But mm-hmm. that's going to happen again in August. We're working with them on that. And so we'll be officially rolling that out. Waiter is back on as our title sponsor, so we're excited about that. And we're hoping to get some new unconventional sponsors, because we know just about every single business has been affected by this, but there are some who are doing a little better
right.
than others. And so hopefully we'll be able to get a few more sponsors that can help us pick up the loss in revenue that we've experienced by not having the registration mm-hmm. fee. And then the other piece of that is our organization, our revenue is down significantly. So it's not like we can throw a bunch of money into the campaign.
I was about to ask.
But we're going to do the best yeah. best that we can. And I think it'll be a great representation for our mm-hmm. area and encouraging everybody to support our locally owned restaurants mm-hmm. as they always have. And this is our 16th year of Eat Lafayette. Right. It's probably now most important as it's ever been.
How is your department funded?
We're funded a couple different ways, but the majority of our funding comes from a 4% hotel occupancy tax here in Lafayette Parish. So if you stay in a hotel, you pay a 4% local sales tax, you pay a 4.375 or whatever it is, state sales tax, and you pay a 4% occupancy tax, and that 4% comes back to our organization to market and promote travel to our area and to promote people to stay in the hotels and dine in our restaurants and all those things that come along with the tourism economy. So that's the majority of our funding, over 90%, but we do get a few different grants, and we are a membership-based organization, which is not at all about the revenue. We only generate around $30,000 in revenue from that, but it's just about making sure our partners are engaged with what we're doing. But the majority of our funding does come from the occupancy tax.
So this is really, the ripple effect is incredible.
Sure. And what's the toughest part about it is that, you know, as an organization that is, you want to be able to do as much as you can when your partners are struggling like they are now. But unfortunately, our funding is going to be going to be hit, and we won't see that. We're a couple of months behind the way the sales tax collection comes in, so we're starting to see it now. We didn't see it right away, but fortunately, we had some reserves, and we're gonna tap into those reserves. And the hardest part is going to be as we want to continue to do more to try to drive traffic. Certainly, our funding is going to be impacted, but we're hoping at some point that we're uncovering every possible stone that we can for different federal funding and state funding, possible CDBG funding. For BP, as an example, we were able to get some funding to help offset the perception that the country had that we were, the whole state was under oil. And that was our two best years on record, 2014 and 2013, after we had an extra $1 million in our advertising budget to promote traffic. And of course, you had other factors. Oil was doing really well at that time. But there's no question that the money that we spend to market our community has a direct return, as high as a 38-to-1 return on investment. And so that's what we're hoping to be able to identify some federal funding or some state funding to offset the losses that we've had, because it's going to be now even more important as our not only our hotels, our attractions, our restaurants are struggling, that we get the tourism economy back.
Right. I mean, I kind of assume the federal government would be helping some. They don't have an bottomless pit of money either.
And it's kind of a unique situation that we're a political subdivision of the state, and in such, we're not eligible for any kind of PPP, payroll program. We're not eligible for a couple different things. The EDA grant we've looked into, but marketing is not one of the types of funding that they're looking to provide support for, and so we're continually having conversations. And I'm the chair this year of the Louisiana Travel Association, which in some instances you might say, "Wow, what a year to be the chair!"
But and the vice chair
because of my chairmanship, I've been given the opportunity to be involved in a lot of different committees and conversations that I wouldn't have been involved in. And so we've hired a lobbying firm out of D.C. to help us navigate some of this as an association. And so we're doing everything we can to be able to support our members, and hopefully that'll trickle down at some point.
Right. So I'd like to pivot a little bit and maybe talk about the quality of life in Lafayette.
Sure.
You know, we've had some discussion because of the parishes and the city of Lafayette's budget crisis. A lot of things have been shut down, in particular the Hyman Center, and I understand it's going to open up on a limited basis to allow some of these dance recitals, the planetarium, you know, the science museum, and the nature station. And these are things that thriving communities want and need, in my opinion.
Right.
What are your thoughts on some of this? You know, there's a real push-pull between just funding the minimum the government needs to do or prioritizing what a thriving community needs. And I know you were a proponent of CREATE, which has been controversial in some ways, but the purpose for that was to promote culture, recreation, all the things that make a community one people want to move to and live in.
Right. Well, these are unprecedented times, and fortunately, in my position, I kind of see all sides of it. I spent some time as a director of community development, as you know, and during that time, the Hyman Center was running around $500,000 deficit, and the Science Museum was running around over $1 million deficit. And so those are realities, and the situation that our mayor and our council is in right now, given the finances that are the shape of the finances that they're currently in, and then COVID on top of that, that's a tough pill to swallow. And so I think certainly I see all sides of this equation. And I think it is a time where you have to have some conversations as a community and see what that looks like. And I think the mayor is exactly right in that, are there opportunities for public-private partnerships? Mm-hmm. Are there ways to close that deficit? Because I don't think the deficit is probably sustainable in given where we are in COVID-19. And so I'm hoping to be a part of those conversations. And mm-hmm. and there's a couple different scenarios I think that we need to talk about. And you know, let's just use a science museum as an example. And look, this hits home to me. I hired a lot of these people when I was there, and I certainly mm-hmm. feel for them.
Because those are under the Office of Community Development.
Correct.
All of those.
And people are losing their jobs in every sector of the community. But it was obviously, you just saw it play out, a very emotional issue. And now that the dust has settled, I mean, you know, it's democracy has a way of working itself out sometimes. And I think, you know, we just need to kind of let the dust settle and see where things happen. But it's also, I think, a time for us to have some conversations as a community. And the Science Museum, as an example, $1.2 million deficit is hard to sustain, and so it's a very large building. It's a beautiful building. Maybe there's some opportunities to where they don't need all three stories. I don't think they're even using the third story right now, as an example. And maybe you work with the private sector to get some type of development, lofts or something on the top floor or even the second floor, and all of a sudden you're able to cut that deficit a little bit. Mm-hmm. Those kind of conversations, I think, are conversations that are healthy and that they need to happen. And so I think those are good. I mean, you know, the other thing too is, as I see it from a tourism standpoint, and I've shared this with a couple different people, including the director, and if the government's going to subsidize a museum, then is it time to have a conversation of maybe instead of a science museum, that it's a some sort of music museum or something that better reflects our culture and would drive more traffic to our area. And I think they've done a great job. I hired Kevin Krantz when I was the director there, and he's done a phenomenal job with the program, and they have great volunteers. But could you perhaps close that deficit a little bit if you had a different type of museum that mm-hmm. that maybe spoke to our cultural uniqueness, and whether it be Louisiana Music Hall of Fame, which has been talked about for the state.
We don't have that
some kind
in
of
Louisiana?
Grammy, not that I'm aware of, a Grammy type museum, which has been talked about.
Yeah.
And every time these things come up in discussion, obviously we listen, but how can you even talk about having another museum when we can't even support the museums that we have? And so mm-hmm. I think the timing is of such that we need to have some of these conversations, and I welcome those conversations, and I like to be a part of them, because I do think that this is a time, again, an unprecedented time where everything is obviously it's on the table, and decisions have to be made, and mm-hmm. you have to look at it all. And so, I mean, but you're right. I mean, I don't think anybody argues that. I don't know any great community that doesn't have a performing arts center. I mean, can you think of any? I mean,
no.
Certainly not without a mountain or a beach in their town where people are doing other things. So there's things that we have that are important to our quality of life. They're important to what we do. You know, we had an event that was on July 11th, a bodybuilding championship. And so from just a tourism standpoint, mm-hmm. that was the only event that really we were affected by. The dance recitals are great for our economy and great for the families and those children, but it does not necessarily a tourism driver, but we were able to find a new home for that event. So that was my focus. And again, I'm really focused on trying to do what I can mm-hmm. to keep my organization afloat. And
are you going to host them at your house?
No, not at my house. They found another venue, fortunately. And so,
good.
But yeah, I mean, look, it's things get emotional these mm-hmm. days, and there's a lot of different sides to it. And I happen to be in a position where I see all sides of it, mm-hmm. and that's partly because of my background, and I've been in a couple different different places. And I understand the struggles of our government right now financially. I understand the importance of our cultural economy, and I understand the importance of these venues. And I think, you know, these are healthy conversations to have. Yeah. And, you know, unfortunately, people lost their jobs. And that's right. That's just a tough, I mean, people are losing their jobs everywhere. In every sector.
There's no place to move.
The difference
that this isn't happening.
When Halliburton lays off 100 people, it's not as emotional, except for those 100 families. But then when the government lays off 100 people, it becomes mm-hmm. a very emotional issue.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's good to let the dust settle, and I think you're starting to see that. And you know, the mayor's job is to provide solutions, and then it's ultimately, but no mayor in any city can just make decisions like that. They have to have. The council's going to weigh in at some point. You know, the community's going to weigh in at some point. And so that's what a healthy democracy looks like. And so I think, you know, but certainly for me and for what we do, the cultural economy and our culture is such a huge piece of what makes Lafayette what mm-hmm. it is. We don't have the beauty of some other places necessarily. But we have a culture that is second to none, and that right. I would put up against anybody in the world.
Right. I saw where, and that's a good explanation, yeah. Ben. I mean, there's really no answer, but
right.
I just wanted to let you give yeah. your thoughts on that. I saw the Cajun Dome is going to be having some events mm-hmm. this summer, too. I guess, mm-hmm. is that to remind people we're here, we're important? You
well,
know?
Probably partly that, but partly the Cajun Dome is like everybody else, is in really tough financial mm-hmm. position now. You know, they've done a great job over the last year in getting some concerts that have helped. I think they broke even last year financially, which is a big thing for them. And now all of a sudden, for 4 months, you have nothing going on. They laid off, furloughed their employees right away. I think mm-hmm. they were down to 2 employees for a while. And so it's probably partly a reminder, but probably, if I had to say, is that it's a way to try to raise some revenue, and I hope people will go out and support that. And
it'll be free movies. Is that what they're doing? And then they'll be selling refreshments.
As I'm sure they'll make their revenue off the concession stand.
That'll be fun.
But you know, they lost the Cajun Heartland State Fair, which was a big revenue driver for them. The concerts, and so, and then they're in a position that when nobody knows yet when is a concert going to be allowable. When is a festival going to be mm-hmm. allowable? And so. We're all kind of waiting. We've told, as a member of the hospitality task force, we've sort of said, look, our fall festivals need to know by July 1st what are the rules are, what the playing field is, because that's sort of a cutoff date where Festival Acadien, as an example,
right.
or Downtown Live, or anything like that that's happening in the fall, they've got to know by July what the rules are and what mm-hmm. what the guidelines are going to be. Obviously, those things could change a week out, but just in general. And I think we're hoping that we'll hear something by July 1st as to, and every community is different. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned earlier, New Orleans, they're talking about not having Mardi Gras. Well, here in Lafayette Parish, we're talking about moving forward with Mardi Gras as it always was. And so any kind of sort of, I guess, regulations or guidelines that come down, I'm trying to make sure that we have, as Lafayette Parish, have a voice mm-hmm. to say that, look, we're different maybe than other parts of the state, but this is, you know, something that maybe we can do. Maybe New Orleans can't. But let's just see where it all lands,
right.
I guess, and hopefully. I got to believe by the fall that I have to be hopeful that, mm-hmm. and I advocate in everything that I'm doing, that we can, and we've proven that, we can open up our economy back safely to where people will feel comfortable attending a festival. And I think at the end of the day, a lot of the burden is going to be on individual people themselves. You can't police social distancing. You can't do all those things. It's got to be individual people. And if somebody doesn't feel safe to attend a festival, then they don't have to go.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully, what we really need for the tourism economy by the fall to be back and be back safely. And if that happens, then I think you'll see people starting to travel again. And hopefully in a year from now, nobody will ever remember COVID-19.
I hope so. It's still surreal for me.
Yes.
I don't know anybody that's had it or has died.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel very fortunate. And I take it seriously. And yet it's as if we're watching a movie. It's just so surreal that things shut down.
It really is.
It's just
incredible. Kept waiting to get woken up from a bad dream there for a
exactly.
little while.
Exactly. Boy, wouldn't that be nice? Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're all doing the best we can, but most of the health practitioners I know feel that we can move forward. And if you need to wear a mask, you know, where you're out and about, wear the mask, wash your hands, but we need to get back.
There's no question. And there's some things, I was telling somebody the other day, there are some things that I have learned from this that I will continue. As an example, when I would go pump my gas, I wouldn't wash my hands before I went back in my car.
Or wear gloves even.
And I haven't worn gloves, but I will have hand sanitizer in my car just so after I pump the gas or after I go to the grocery store. I think that's probably a good practice. And if you talk to a lot of doctors and they've been doing that for a long time. So those kind of things I think I will continue to do, but we'll see.
Right. Is there anything you wanted to bring up that we haven't talked about?
I think we covered a lot.
Yeah. I'm hoping this taped. We may be having to retape the beginning based on operator error here.
I welcome the opportunity to come back and appreciate what you're doing with this podcast to get the message out.
I love it. Yeah. I love this. I'm so grateful for your support. And we do have a wonderful community in South Louisiana. Is one of the best places you can live in the world, I think. We're just blessed with good weather, good people, and we have a deep, rich culture that we need to all work to sustain and cherish.
I do have one thing I'll mention since you piqued my memory. We're hoping to be able to host in October the world's largest travel bloggers conference. It's called TBEX, and we landed that gig obviously before all this COVID-19 happened, but we had the potential of having up to 600 bloggers here who will then go back and write great stories on our area, and it will have an estimated economic impact of around $41 million in earned media that we will generate.
Right.
And that's not a number that's being made up. That's a number from other cities who have hosted it. So right now we're kind of in the, we're trying to really decide is can they meet our expectations in terms of the number of people. But either way, whether it's in the fall or the spring, that's a big deal that we're going to be hosting. Mm-hmm. It's only held once a year in the United States, and it's held once a year internationally. So we're really excited about that. And
that's wonderful.
And moving forward with that. And I know.
Do you enjoy that when people come in? Is it just so much fun to show them around?
I love it. And, you know, my background is public relations and marketing. It's what I majored in and have done some of that in my career prior to this. And so to be able to, you know, tell our story and to see people, what I find the most fascinating is, you know, we're proud of our area, but when you see your area from the lens of somebody else who's not from here and their appreciation of things that maybe we take for granted sometimes is really what excites me the most. And we hosted a press trip for Mardi Gras a couple of years ago, and there were seven or eight people, but I'll never forget this lady, and we let her ride on the float, and she just couldn't get over herself. But she said it was a spiritual experience, and I thought, wow, that's pretty neat, something that she'll never forget.
Really?
It was that impactful to her, and those are the kind of things that happen all the time. I mean, Mardi Gras doesn't happen all the time, but the same experience people have when they go to Buck and Johnny's on a Saturday and see the Zydeco brunch. Are they in a swamp tour on the Chaffalai Basin or Lake Martin or downtown at the Cadian Center for the Arts or, you know, Bayou Tej Beer and Broussard or, oh, no, sorry, not Bayou, Parish Brewing and Broussard or Bayou Tej in Arneville or Tabasco, you know, to see these people's faces. And I think a lot of times they're surprised by what we have here because we're not a tier one city. We're a smaller area, but that's why it's so important. I always say if we can get somebody here, we have them hooked. We just got to get them here. And that's why the work that we do is so important to get people here. And then once that happens, there's stories all over the place of people who have come here for whatever reason and then moved here. And you know, they came for Festival International and they fell in love with it and moved here. And so the tourism economy is not just about visitors. It's about generally could lead to the workforce improvement. Somebody comes here, falls in love with the area, and then, you know, they move here. They want to move here and get a job.
There are stories about. I mean, there's so many
people. Maybe they decided to move their company here.
Right.
And so it's a trickle effect, a ripple effect of what. And you know, that retirement is a good example of that. When the statistics of if somebody is going to retire, they generally go to, multiple times to that community as a visitor, mm-hmm. and then they decide that they want to retire. And those kind of things happen all the time as a result of the tourism economy.
Yeah, that reminds me of my Upper Lafayette days. I just always thought, what a great place to retire, because we're right at the crossroads of I-10 and, you know, I-12, and you can just, I-49, you can just go, I'm sitting here, I just feel like you can go anywhere. You can go to Houston, you can go, you know, to the beach, but you can stay here, have your hunting and fishing, your wonderful food, the wonderful people, and then travel the country at a good base.
It's a great point. And our location, and particularly, as we talked about earlier, in the international market. Mm-hmm. So international market, they got to fly into a major hub. So Houston, we're on the way to New Orleans. If they find Dallas, we're on the way to New Orleans. And so our location and our culture benefit us tremendously, because they have to stop at some point. They don't have to stop, but they have to pass through Lafayette to get to get to New Orleans, which most people are wanting to do. And so it's our location definitely plays a factor in that as well.
We'll just have to get one of those Buc-ee's for
there you go.
One day.
There you go.
Well, Ben Berthelot, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely.
And again, we're taping in my home, and we had a little mishap when the dogs started barking. So I'm hoping this... I know the last part of the interview is all right, but thank you for being so patient. And I want to thank our listeners. We have a very dedicated group of people that support us. Thank you for listening. You can listen to Ben's interview and others at discoverlafayette.net, or you can do even better and subscribe and get this delivered to your phone every Friday. I'd also like to thank the people that make our podcast possible. First of all, Iberia Bank, Lafayette General Health, Rally Marketing, and very importantly, Raider, in particular, Jason Sikora, that mixes our podcast. They make us sound professional. I'm very grateful for the support of all these people. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, this is Jan Swift. Thank you.